Welcome to the Anthropology in Business podcast, where you'll learn about the many ways anthropology is applied in business and why business anthropology is one of the most effective lenses for making sense of organizations and consumers. Through conversations with leading anthropologists working in advertising, marketing, consumer behavior, organizational culture, user experience, and many other roles, you'll learn firsthand what it means to do business anthropology and how the work differs from academic anthropology. We'll discuss issues like the pace and depth of research in business, our visibility and influence as practitioners, and what we can do to build our brand. We will also focus on the value and impact of our research in business so that we can help business leaders understand why they should be hiring anthropologists. I'm your host, Matt Arts, a business anthropologist specializing in design anthropology and working at the intersection of product management, user experience, and business strategy. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Anthropology and Business podcast. I'm Matt Arts, and I'm here today with Jennifer Studebaker, an anthropologist and founder of Studebaker Consulting, also recent author of the Anthropology Career Readiness Network Career Tools for Anthropology Workbook. So Jennifer, thanks for joining today. Would you mind telling everybody how you got interested in anthropology?
Hey, Matt. Yeah, thanks for having me. My journey to anthropology, I'm going to be honest, feels a little stereotypical. So I was one of those kids who really loved Indiana Jones. I know, very cringe now. I went into my undergraduate really wanting to get a degree in archaeology because I had this vision of, you know, you get to go on these great big adventures to other countries, learn about other cultures and, you know, discover, you know, mysterious secrets, you know, very, very like 1960s vision of what anthropology was. And I remember sitting in my first like introductory class on archaeology and realizing like, oh, you dig in the same spot for 10 years? Oh boy, that sounds really boring. And I also don't like camping. So I had to pivot a little there in terms of my career expectations, but I also still really loved anthropology as a topic. So I pivoted a little more into, I would say like biocultural anthropology. So really looking at the intersection between, you know, human evolution and human behavior. And, as like most anthropologists, turned my trauma into my research. So while I was in, college, my father was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And this was like a huge shock to us. We're like, you know, out of nowhere. And then, of course, like most family sort of situations where it's like, oh, yeah, your great uncle had that too. And you're like, really? Like, nobody's talked about this. So I actually did my honors thesis research around knowledge of type 2 diabetes and, you know, people's familiarity with the symptoms and how to recognize it. And also, type 2 diabetes, I think, is one of those ones that there's a lot of, I would say, misinformation out there about it in terms of how it develops, why it develops, and the ways to prevent it. You know, where most people just like never eat sugar. And it's like, it's a little more complex than that. So that led me into looking at more like medical anthropology oriented programs when I was applying to grad school. I think I briefly thought about just stopping with my BA, and then I looked up how much some jobs paid, and then I was like, maybe I should go to grad school. And I ended up getting accepted at Purdue University, which they have a terminal master's program with the option to continue on to a PhD, which I feel like was actually a really great fit because a lot of the other programs we're looking at were just like straight PhD programs where it's like if you get the master's, it's because like something went wrong in terms of your experience. And while I was at Purdue, I was really fortunate to get exposed to the idea of practice. And I think I'm somebody that's always been very pragmatic in terms of how I think about and operate in my general work. But it was thanks to Raul Nolan at Purdue that I was introduced to the concept of actually like applying anthropology in business contexts, as well as, you know, other like nonprofits and government type work. So I really was fortunate to leave my graduate education with an understanding of what practice was and what it could be used for, and also just like the power and influence that that could have on the like world. I did choose to stop at my master's just because I recognized, like, with the PhD, well, I definitely think I could like kill it today. At the time, I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to like need to be checked into an asylum if I try to hang on longer. So I needed a break and to sort of recalibrate and, you know, do a little soul searching. So my first job out of graduate school, outside of brief 2 week stint at like a local park running their gift shop, was at the Society for Ethnomusicology. So I was hired in the business office there. And I think it was actually kind of the perfect transition job between academia and like more business, you know, administration context, because I was located at Indiana University, which was my alma mater for my undergrad. And I was working primarily with other academics. So my executive director at the time, Steve, he's since retired, go Steve, he really approached our professional relationship more as like a professor-student one. So I was really blessed to have somebody who like took me under their wing and explained, you know, how nonprofits work. He hired somebody to come and show me how to do bookkeeping. I had, I think, initially been hired for my website skills. So I helped them with the website migration and managing the membership database there. So I got exposed to kind of like the nuts and bolts of how an organization operates there in this sort of like safe little academic bubble. So I didn't have like the culture shock of going straight into, you know, I got a little more of that in some of my later workplaces. But that's really where that kind of transition in my anthropology career took me initially after school.
So, you know, you had the great opportunity to study under Ryle. Obviously, that you're sort of very lucky for that experience. Not everybody has that, especially those who then, you know, later practice who would have benefited from it. And so though you had that experience and you just shared, obviously, where you first ended up, what at the time, though, in your program were you thinking you would do, you know, after, you know, if the thesis was, you know, medical related, were you thinking you would do something in the medical space?
Yeah, I actually briefly considered getting either an MPH or a PhD in public health. And a lot of the places I initially applied were more health oriented. I also was really leaning into the food and nutrition space. So I looked at some programs around that. So I was looking, you know, just based on people's guidance, a lot more like research assistant or associate type roles, but also looking at stuff that was related to administration. So just like providing some personal like backstory too, is my father is a Unity minister. So as a minister, he is kind of like the executive director of a nonprofit, you know, as well. So I had been exposed to like a lot of that kind of like office type work within like smaller nonprofits. So that is also another area that I saw an opportunity in, is I think how I ended up at the Society for Ethnomusicology initially. And it was a really good fit for me, I think, for that initial sort of start of my career. But I was looking at, like, you know, when I was in grad school, thinking about working in either like NGOs, nonprofit organizations focused around health issues, or government administration type work.
And so, you know, obviously since your first role, you've gone, you know, there's some similarities in where you've stayed, but there's also some differences, sort of customer research coming in, you know, I know that you have an interest in UX and web development. So tell us, like, how does this sort of broad palette come to be?
Yeah. So, I absolutely loved working at the Society for Ethnomusicology, but I think most people who have lived in college towns get to a certain point where it's like, you know, everybody, you're feeling like you're stagnating and you're like, I don't know if there's ever going to be a job that pays more than $15 an hour. So my now husband and I made the decision to move to Kansas City. One, so he could pursue his graduate education, but also because I recognized that I wasn't really pushing myself in terms of like my current career path. And I had, again, influenced by media, I had this vision of like working in a tech startup. Like I was like, that looks so cool. So I actually did get my wish. The first place I worked here in Kansas City is a civic tech company, and I'm sure they wouldn't mind me sharing their name, My Sidewalk. Let's just say when I first joined, they had this kind of cool mapping tool where you could overlay data on maps. And that's about most that you could do with it. So like kind of your light GIS. And I was actually initially hired for like a side contract that they had gotten where I think they're just trying to get some kind of income while they're working on building out the original design for their product. So I was hired as an election research analyst, which meant like I was calling up local, county offices to get the shape files for their maps of the different, you know, school districts and stuff, because we were building a ballot generator for the 2016 election. So I dated myself. and that was wild because one, you just got exposed to like how our election process works and the range of candidates that are out there, which if you ever have imposter syndrome, go look at who's trying to run for office. But I think we've all learned that lesson now. but they, so once that contract ended, they let me go, but then called me back up because they had some additional work for me to do. So I think that's one thing to like lesson to share with people is, you know, sometimes it feels like a door is closing, but it might open again. You never know. Give it a couple weeks, especially with startups. And they invited me to back in as a data collection analyst, I think was the kind of role. And for that one, it was really just reaching out to organizations to try and access some of this like open source data. So this was during that sort of period where like everyone was into Socrata and it's like, yeah, data, if we all just have the numbers, we can solve all the problems, you know, kind of phase. And while I was there, it was actually at a happy hour afterwards that my supervisor at the time, Jen, was like, you know, I really don't understand who our customer is. And I had the like ding, 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 because it's like I've been preparing for this moment. So even though I was focused more on medical anthropology and biocultural in grad school, I did have a chance to get exposed to like UX and that more business anthropology world. We had Elizabeth Briety, who will come up later, as a guest at our a guest for Anthropology Club at Purdue. So I knew that you could use anthropological methods to like solve some of these challenges. So I was like, you have data for that. Cause I knew they had intercom and they're collecting all of this sort of customer feedback. And I was like, we could just start looking at that. And bless them. Like, I think this is one of the things that's really cool about that kind of startup space is literally Monday. They're like, okay, you guys are on this project. So I started with kind of combing through the data that they already had. And then we really got into looking at what our product could do and then starting to think about, okay, who would want to do this in terms of like who values data and maps? And we reached out to some of the current clients they've been working with. So they had a really strong relationship with the city in Kansas City, but also looked at some other types of organizations or, for example, your metropolitan planning organizations, economic development corporations. And so through this process, I got to do some like deep dive research into like these markets that like you just don't even think about all of these like tax assessment districts that are out there. And through that process, we brought in current clients and also prospective clients for interviews and also workshopping. And thanks to that work, I think we really made a lot of progress in one, defining like what the product should be. Because at this point, there wasn't a lot of like reporting capabilities. So we're like, okay, people doing this work, we really took that jobs to be done framework when we were thinking about this is like, okay, I'm buying this product. What am I trying to do with it? I'm trying to make PowerPoint presentations for my bosses, you know, or I need to write a report. So you need to be able to export those pictures and images into those documents. So that was like an example of like a quick win. But also we thought too, on like a deeper level, if we're trying to target these big, like, you know, government institutions, they may not always have somebody that can do that sort of analysis. So they actually ended up developing more of like a concierge experience with dashboards, where my sidewalk would work with the client to build out sort of a custom mini website that you could go to and see all of the local data. So based on all of that research, our sort of like first recommended pivot for them was into that city intelligence space. I think that was really successful for them. My contract, of course, was coming to an end, so I was looking at some other opportunities. But when I left them, I was like, you definitely need to get into public health, which thankfully they finally did. And I think they've been doing all right since then. So that was sort of my first foray into like that, you know, intersection between market research and UX, because you're also thinking about like, okay, what does the product do? But also who wants to buy it? My job right after that was with the service management group. So SMG for short. And they're a market research company. So if you, you know, go to a fast food restaurant like Burger King, you have that little survey down at the bottom of the receipt that we were the people on the other end reading all of your comments. Now, I never got to work on the Burger King team. That was a pretty exclusive one. But I got to work with a whole bunch of dozens of restaurant, retail, and grocery clients predominantly, with a few nonprofits thrown in there. And that was really, I think, a great experience as somebody that's kind of newer in like earlier in my career, because I got exposed to, I think, kind of the core pieces of like that kind of consulting relationship where it's, you know, making those PowerPoints really pretty. You know, how do you develop recommendations in a way that's like not going to hurt anybody's ego? You know, like all of those skills. And also the work was really kind of fun. Like there was a part of me as somebody who previously studied like diabetes and obesity that was kind of like, do I want to help them sell more chicken nuggets? But so there was a little moral conflict there, but it was really interesting and like engaging work. But also I think, which is true of like a lot of agencies of that type, it was pretty high stress from like really low stakes, where everyone's just kind of running around like their hair's on fire when it's like, it's a survey. No one is going to die. And I recognized I really wanted to do work that was a little more engaged locally. So I jumped from there to, I won't name them, but another smaller consulting firm that focused on fundraising. And there I got to work with like a wide range of clients. But again, it's like that type of agency environment where it's just so reactionary in certain ways that it, for me, it just felt like it was setting me up for burnout long term. And in that case, I just was like, kind of like, I need a break. And I ended up taking a short one for a few months, which I know in this job market, that's really scary. At the time though, I felt like I could get a job pretty quickly. And I think this is a really great illustration of how like networking, matters and helps, and that like connections you make like years before can get you a job. So when I was at that transition point between my sidewalk and SMG, I had worked with a recruiter here in Kansas City, chief of staff. They're pretty great. I definitely recommend them. And I had connected with one of their team members, and she was trying to like get me some, you know, interviews and jobs. And they tend to focus, I think, more like administration marketing type jobs. I did have like a really wild job interview with this group that wanted to do like Uber for private jets. That was interesting, but didn't get that job. But So I had ended up getting that job at SMG without her assistance, but I stayed connected with her on LinkedIn. And when she saw that I was available for work, she reached out to me saying, hey, I've got an opportunity at the Kauffman Foundation. So here's where I throw in my views are not representative of my employer since the Kauffman Foundation. I'm currently working with them. this was one of those situations where that previous connection got me a foot in the door. And I would say the Kauffman Foundation is one of those organizations, too, where there's certain types of roles they tend to hire through staffing agencies over doing open calls. So this was kind of like the sneaky little backdoor in. So I think if you were going to apply to a job listed on the Kauffman Foundation's website today, you might go through like 4 or 5 interviews. Whereas I got a 30-minute interview. before I got hired. So I really lucked out there. And I was brought in as like a temp to hire role. So I think this is one of those things where, you know, for people who are maybe like trying to get into the job market, maybe don't have like a great idea of what they want to do, I would say reach out to a staffing agency in your area because they can help you get your foot in the door and also get access to jobs that may not be publicly listed. So that's one piece of advice I would share with folks. At the Kauffman Foundation, I was hired really more for my administrative skills that I'd had mostly at like my previous work at the Society for Ethnomusicology. But during my time there, I was able to like recognize again, kind of how I did it, my sidewalk opportunities for applying anthropology to our work. So a great example of that is, you know, I had another situation where like, you know, one of my leaders was like, I really want to understand this group of people. And I was like, I can help you with that. And, you know, bless them too. Like they were like, yeah, okay, go ahead, go interview them. Let's do some surveys. And I got to really apply that skill set. So it was really during this period, actually probably starting with my sidewalk and then during my time at Kauffman that I started getting back into the sort of anthropology space. So to be honest, like before that, I just didn't have enough money to go to conferences. Like I would have loved to go hang out with folks, but the cost of, you know, membership and going to a city. And also I didn't feel like I had stuff to present on, which looking back, I probably did. Because even going back to Bloomington before I came to Kansas City, I was heavily involved with the Bloomington Food Policy Council. So there I was a member of the steering committee, and I led our assessment working group, which we did like a community survey around, you know, grower behavior and, you know, what are the barriers for people having their own gardens. So I, thinking back, like, I think I had not fully acknowledged like the amount of work that I had done that had value from like an applied perspective. Cause I guess sometimes you think you have to have like grand revelations out of it. but yeah, since then I've had, the opportunity to, get to do a lot more internal, but some external facing, research.
Let me ask you this. So in that time, you also got interested, somewhere in that period, you also got interested in project management and you end up getting your PMP. So how does that fit in?
Yeah. So really that was kind of responding to like organizational needs. So, and I think this is one of those things where like when I first got introduced to project management as a concept, I was like, you need like training for that. Isn't that just being like organized and like being good at like planning things? And I had known about like the project manager role from like more of like the tech perspective. It was in response to internal needs at my workplace that they encouraged me to go ahead and study for the PMP. Now, for those that are maybe interested in getting a PMP, it's through the Project Management Institute. It's actually, I think, probably one of the more accessible certificates that are out there. You need to have 35 PDUs, which are kind of like credit hours, that you can either get them through taking like a course with somebody that'll, you know, the one I took was really focused on how to take the PMP exam, which was very helpful. But you can also, if you join PMI, and I think membership's only like $150, they have a whole bunch of webinars you can just go watch. And if you watch the webinars, you get PDUs for that. So that's actually a pretty easy way to get access to that. And then the test itself, I think, is only about $400. Now, I will say it's pretty tricky, and I do recommend the study hall for anybody who's going to do it, because they're very, very sneaky questions. We're very much like, choose the best answer or the top two. So for anyone interested in that, I definitely do recommend it. But I found the process of going through that training and learning about project management more formally really kind of opened my eyes to like understanding how the organizations I have worked with over the years functioned. You know, because I think a lot of people assume that organizations are more what they call in project management is like predictive style project management, where it's like we set a deadline and we work towards that deadline after we mapped back all the tasks. Or in some places, they just go and hope they make it, which I don't know what style you call that. but I realized through this process that, you know, a lot of the places I have worked had been more agile in terms of their approach or hybrid between those two. So that was really, really fascinating to learn about. And also one of the other skill sets that I was really appreciated the chance to practice at Kauffman was facilitation. So actually earlier today I had a chat with someone else that professionally does this, but the like art of facilitation, I think it's like project management, one of those things that people take for granted as a skill set, but if it's not there, you feel it. So that's another area that I'm like really excited and enjoy doing. And also this, I think, goes back to my working in an office, but also at the Kauffman, a lot of the work that I did was focused on like operations. So like really thinking through, okay, we want to do this. Right now it feels painful. How do we break down our workflow in a way that works for everybody and gets us to that end goal without like with minimal suffering or maybe even having fun?
So speaking of getting to an end goal, so now you just got to, you know, an end goal yourself. That is a good milestone, which is, of course, the book that I mentioned at the outset. So the, you know, Career Tools for Anthropology workbook. And that was, you know, you and Elizabeth and Ryle. That is really in some ways meant to do the same, you know, for students, to almost help them, you know, get to an end goal of a job, helping them sort of think about the journey in sort of a multi-step process. So tell us a little bit about, you know, the process of working on that book, as well as what the book communicates and what, you know, you're trying to accomplish.
Sure. So the book actually was the sort of like seed of it was birthed out of a previous project that I had participated with the Anthropology Career Readiness Network. So the network was formed, I think, 21? yeah, it's been a couple of years. With the goal of really helping prepare instructors to teach their students, you know, skills that are going to help them in the workplace. So really, how do we help anthropology graduates entering the workplace be as ready as possible? And I think for most of us, and, you know, no shade at my previous professors, if you've only ever worked in academia, sometimes it's really hard to think about what are the possibilities and potentials there. So the working group that I got to help lead at sort of the, I guess, outset of the Anthropology Career Readiness Network was really focused around practitioner experiences. So we took the time to interview current anthropology graduates that were working in practice roles and ask them about, you know, what did they wish they learned in school? What skills are they currently using? And as a result of this, you know, sort of, we called it like a rapid assessment, we had a report, but it was like 40 pages long. And I was really not sure that people would take the time to read it that needed to get the information. And also we had these kind of like snippets of information that I felt would be really impactful just on their own. And so that's where you got the idea of creating like a tip sheet. So these handouts. So the first two that we put together, and my idea, like having that marketing background from working at different organizations, was, you know, how do we have some collateral on the table? Like, I think Elizabeth did a great job getting some pens and cute little, you know, post-it notes. But what do we have as like takeaways for people to learn from? So the first one we developed was the job titles to explore tool, with the second being the translating anthropology skills for the workplace. I think is its current title. We've changed them a few times. And the skills translator was actually in reaction to something that people had asked for during those interviews we did, where it's like, this would have been really nice to have. And it's like, well, why don't we just make it? So those were sort of the first two tools. And like, since then, like, Elizabeth, you know, took this and ran, and she's been awesome in terms of recruiting people to write these tools. And I didn't even realize it for a while, but she's also been recruiting people to review these tools. So any of the tools that you see in this workbook has been touched by, like, you know, it's not just one person writing it and being like, this is, you know, truth, but it's been through rounds of edits to make sure it's as, you know, accurate and helpful as possible. So we accumulated all of these tools. So we've got one set that was really focused on job seekers and students, and another set that's for instructors. And we recognize that, you know, there's maybe an opportunity to bundle all of these job seeker tools into what is now the workbook. And I think this workbook is like a really great example of like what you can do with a group of people who are really passionate about what they're doing in a very quick time frame. So I can't remember when we first had the idea. It might have been back in like March or so, but we kicked off this project, I would say, start of June. And with Zara, she was one of our interns for the summer. We had her join us as one of the editors. And we actually did kind of like a double duty in terms of the work, where we were developing the workbook while also refining the tools that we had on the website for a consistent look and feel and format. And then we could transfer them over into the workbook. But yeah, it was a lot of work in terms of just getting through all of those. It's also just making sure all the authors were aware of what we were doing and we had their permission. And, you know, Elizabeth did a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of the connecting sort of pieces between the tools. But it was really an exciting collaborative process that we did this all over Google Drive. So, you know, it's possible. We don't have to email each other everything all the time. Yeah. And I think my project management skills definitely helped me in terms of like being able to break down that work into something that was manageable. So yeah, we started it in June, and we just had it go live for purchase on Amazon on August 23rd. So yeah, we got it done in about, really the bulk of the work was in 2 months, but then we had a little slow down and calm down as we got our marketing plan together in August. And it's been doing actually really well. You know, I think by academic standards, we're probably a smash hit, you know, in terms of purchases. But we also made the decision to publish through Amazon, which I know there's issues, but we really wanted to try and make sure we could set the price point as low as possible and have the broadest distribution we could. So we've currently got it set at $10 for the ebook and paperback. As somebody that formatted both of them, I'd probably recommend the paperback. It's a lot prettier. It's hard to make Kindle ebooks super pretty. But hopefully a value for anybody that gets it in either format.
That's good to know. And so for anybody listening, can look it up on Amazon or the Anthropology Career Readiness Network website. And so aside from that, if anybody wanted to say get in touch with you to learn more about, you know, the consulting work you do or anything, where would be a good place for people to reach out?
Yeah. So I've got my website. It's studebakerconsulting.com. I guess, do I legally need to say I'm a LLC? I've got that in my logo. So that's my website. My company really focuses in on process design, consumer research, facilitation, and training. So one of the things I'm really passionate about, and you can see it from the ACRN work, is just making sure that everybody has actual tools they need to do their work. So the best way to connect with me and follow me would be on LinkedIn. And in terms of things that I've got coming up, I haven't formally announced anything yet, but maybe by the time this comes out, I do plan on offering some trainings around how to use Google Drive. I think this is a skill set that, you know, a lot of people take for granted. And for those that may be transitioning from academia, you may have not had anybody that could sit you down and show you how to take advantage of that. So something that I do plan on offering is sort of like a free webinar series coming up in October.
Very cool. Well, I'm sure everybody will look out for it, and I'll link to the sites. So Jennifer, thanks for coming on. Appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you for listening to the Anthropology in Business podcast. To learn everything you need to break into business anthropology and why business anthropology is one of the best lenses for contributing to business success, visit my website at mattarts.me, where I cover many topics related to business anthropology and beyond. There you will find all the podcast episodes, blogs, and news. Please like, share, and subscribe. See you next time.